Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. First off, I'd like to point something out. That is, I don't have it out in for Peppa Pig. The fact that I wrote an article about it in the Irish Times last weekend, that Catherine Bell in England, we don't know each other, we're completely unconnected to each other, happened to write about Peppa Pig as well within a few days, is just a coincidence. Or perhaps some sort of weird synchronicity. Someone's texting to say, get a life. It's a kids' cartoon. Lord. We do have an announcement from our pointing out the obvious department here in News Talk. She had her tongue in her cheek. I hate that they oink after each sentence. Makes me feel ill. I never really paid attention to Dr. Brown Bear. How I see all the flaws. You've just ruined Peppa for me. Really? She was suspending your disbelief? A place where animals could talk? I live in little houses on hills. I don't know which would be more believable. Actually, getting a doctor to visit your house or him being a bear. says Fergus, and someone else says, Sean, you know far too much about Peppa Pig and the goings on in that family. Not healthy for an adult. Yes, it's not as if I sit down and watch it by choice. Anyone who was a toddler will unfortunately have an in-depth knowledge of Peppa Pig. And indeed, when I published the article in the Irish Times, the response from adults, obviously, was absolutely enormous. Absolutely most of whom, the vast majority of whom, had a really detailed knowledge of various plot points in Peppa Pig, because you can't help yourself, you just get sucked into it. Speaking of pigs, the real sort, it's time for our farming slot. Mairead Lavery joins us once again.
What's this they say about pigs? Well, they say about dogs. Dogs look up to you. Cats look down on you, but a pig will look you straight in the eye.
Yeah, a pig will take but your measure.
What you're saying about toddlers and small kids, you know, I remember... my youngest fella, we used to sit down after the others went off to school and in the morning and just watch kind of telly for an hour. But it was the Teletubbies were the
rage then. Yeah.
Absolute the range. And just the pure fascination with Teletubbies. And he started primary school grand and I was fine about it for about a week. And then I turned on the telly one morning and there were the Teletubbies. Well, I cried my eyes out and I realised that until I had grandchildren, you know, I'd never again intimately know what it was that were, you know, 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds were plugged into and the cartoons and this whole life. Like, I know nothing about Peppa Pig.
Yeah.
I've heard about her, but I've never gone through the grown-up stage of Peppa Pig. Now, the Teletubbies and, you know, Zig and Zag and all back along from that, I know very, very well.
Yeah.
But it was just then that the kind of, you know, the last one gone to school thing really hit home that morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I always remember it, you know, turning it on. There they were and he was down in school, you know. So, yeah.
All right. I mean, you were saying before we came on air about buying presents for Christmas, obviously. One thing some people might buy is a puppy and you really need to know what you're doing before you go about doing that.
There's, you know, you have a lot of a commitment to a child. But I can tell you, at 18 years, a child, or 17 years, or even 16 years, they're fit to fly the nest and do their own stuff. But you're still very much responsible for a dog.
Mm.
And the little puppy you bought, I mean, it's going to be with you all along 10, 15 years. You know, you're going to get a good long life out of them. So you need to think about it very carefully. But you also are legally required to have these dogs now. Any dog that's over 12 weeks of age has to be microchipped and registered. And if you don't do it, you could be facing a fine of up to €5,000. Now, I don't know how stringent the controls are or the tests are. But I mean, again, if the dog, you know, isn't microchipped, you know, particularly say in the case of sheep kills, of which there are an awful amount of them happening around the country now, and it's a terrible thing to see happen. But if your dog goes missing and you don't have a, you know, you're not microchipped or registered, you know, to get that dog back is very difficult. Anyway, it needs to be done, and to just bear it in mind, it's on top of the licence fee. It can be done by your local vet. So just to be aware of it.
If you're buying a puppy, it's your responsibility to get a microchip, not the person you're buying it from.
Well, it's both your responsibilities, really, because you'll have to register it as you own it. You're the new owner of it. But it's illegal to actually sell. And now, you see, puppies might be sold under 12 weeks of age and they have to be microchipped once they're over 12 weeks. So, you know, you could be selling the dog at, or a little puppy, it's 8 weeks or, you know, under the 12-week age thing. So I think you can do it then. But in actual fact, if you're selling any sort, any animal, any dog over 12 weeks of age, it has to be microchipped and it has to be registered.
Right. Okay.
And there's only a couple of things. There's only a couple of sites where you can register your dog. Fido is one of them.
Good name.
Yeah,
of course.
I'm just looking at my notes here to see where I left the names. Of the yeah, Fido, Animark, the Irish Coursing Club and the Irish Kennel Club. They're the databases that you have to use. And, you know, say if you don't, you can't remember your chip number, your vet will be able to get that for you. You don't know who your database provider is. You can do it by the europepetnet.com. It's a website. There's a whole pile of questions and answers, and they're all on the, you can get them on the Farmers Journal. If you know, if you have any concerns about it, say you're bringing in a dog from the UK, or if you have a very old dog that never leaves the house or never is sitting in front of the fire and the as far as he goes is out the back door for a few minutes every day, even that kind of a dog has to be chipped.
Yeah.
So just to be aware of it, there's a lot of legality around it now. And and anyway, look, if you're thinking about a pup for Christmas for the kids, you know, think long and hard of it. The kids will be grown up and long gone and you'll still have the pup.
Yeah, so, absolutely. It's a lifetime's commitment or the lifetime of the dog anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, another thing people often consider is making a contribution to some charity, Bohr, you wanted to talk about. They've been on the go for 26 years now.
Fantastic work they're doing, and they've been endorsed, well, they've been endorsed for the last few years by Jim Gavin, the Dublin football manager. And he was out, believe it or not, walking a cow around Stephen's Green there last Sunday promoting it. What Bohr is doing is they're in Rwanda and they're doing a lot of work with the widows of the genocide that happened there, you know, in the mid-1990s, which was absolutely horrendous. And the concept is very simple. Farmers all around the country donate an animal to Bohr. Now, they might donate, you know, an in-calf heifer or, you know, and keep it until, you know, it's or, you know, a younger animal and keep it until it's ready to go out to Bohr. But they give the animals, there's an awful lot of preparatory work that's required first in terms of training the people how to manage an animal. Like, you can't just land a cow out and people not know what to do with her or how to manage her. So women are pretty good at learning how to do this because they see the real advantages of it. If the family gets a cow, they have the milk, which means the children have access to protein. They have a really good food source. They may be able to sell some of the milk, which gives them a cash income, which is used to educate the children. The first heifer calf off that cow is given then to another family, and then they can keep the rest of them themselves. So after maybe 5 years, they could end up having three cows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is, you're wealthy by any standards, and the amount of milk that you're producing then is even more, and you're able to sell that, and it's a real knock-on value. To get help to even more families, they know they send out goats, they send out chickens, you know, and all of it is a huge help. So Jim Gavin in particular is terribly supportive of it because he's seen the work that has developed there over the past 26 years and the number of people that have been impacted by it and what it's meant for their lives. So again, you know, you hear there's a couple of those charities now around. Bohr is one of them, where they're doing this practical stuff and where there's a real linkage between Irish farmers and people living a very, very long way away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, animals are also sent out to Kosovo and I think to a couple of other African countries as well. And the whole process is that you pass on the first female animal to another family. And that way the gift keeps giving.
Yes, indeed.
And it's not like, you know, putting a tenner into an envelope or something like that. And, you know, from the point of view of, you know, families here, they have a good connection now with so many families in those countries where they've helped source these, you know, where they've given these animals to. So the airlifts, you know, it's not just collecting the animals, you know, put 5,000 animals on a plane is very, very expensive. And, you know, the standards.
You think so, yeah. And there's a lot of logistics.
Yeah, a lot of logistics and a lot of quality and, you know, just animal safety kind of precautions have to be taken. So that's a really expensive thing as well. So often the limit isn't the amount of animals that are given by the farming community. It's how to pay for the flights and how to pay for the airlifts to get them out there, because that's very expensive.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, just they're a great organisation. They're doing really powerful work, and they're doing it nice and quietly. And
yeah.
They're doing it with the support of families from right around the country.
Just going back to getting a dog for Christmas, Morgan says, please don't talk about buying a puppy for Christmas. Please, please encourage anyone who's thinking of getting a dog for Christmas to adopt. Mm. There are thousands of dogs in rescues and pounds. Please adopt, don't shop, says Morgan. And I imagine if you go and adopt a dog, that's probably already microchipped. So that might save you the bother of that. Careers in agriculture.
Yeah, there's a shortage of them. There's a shortage of people going into the sector, and particularly people who are qualified. Big development in the area of milk, but also in other areas as well. You've got people coming through. But at now, the government has come up with a bunch of new apprenticeships, which should be very useful. One of them is in sports turf management. Now, for...
Did you know there was such a thing as sports turf management?
Well, what do you think sports turf would be?
I suppose it's... Is it looking after pitches and things
football
like that?
Football pitches.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what it'd be like to look after the World Cup football pitches?
Yeah.
Or to be in charge of the grounds of Man United or Liverpool for that matter, or Arsenal or whatever you like, or to be on doing the Olympics. Sports turf management is a huge job.
And even actually in Croke Park.
In Croke Park.
They've loads of huge equipment for,
you know. And what they do and the technology behind it. So I would think that, you know, it's a kind of an idea. Like if you're not, you know, looking for 600 points in the Leaving Cert, you want to be outdoors and you want to be doing really practical stuff, a job like a sports turf management would be absolutely smashing. There's also... a job in stud farm management, and again an ideal kind of an apprenticeship if you're somebody that really wants to work with horses and wants to get a level 7 course, you know, so it's not just that you're doing the practical stuff, you actually get the theoretical stuff and you get a qualification out of it. So they're doing there's 6 new apprenticeships being launched to deal with an absolute recognised shortage of trained people. And 5 of them are being run by Chagas. And there's a 2-year farm technology level 6 course and a 4-year farm management level 7 apprenticeship. So there's also an agricultural mechanics one that has been organised by Tralee IT. And there's also another one that's been run along with the Professional Auctioneers, the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers. And if somebody is already maybe working in a mart, they can apply to do this and it'll bring them along the way to become an auctioneer in their own right.
Mm.
So, you know, we're very poor on the number of apprenticeships we have across all sectors, say in comparison to a country like Germany.
Yeah.
And to see these 6 new ones coming through, not a bad idea.
Yeah, and it's actually good to see apprenticeships coming back rather than you do some, you know, vague degree and you don't really know what the hell you're going to do afterwards.
Yeah, you have no idea what you're going to do, you know. And but these are very practical. They're not just for 18-year-olds. I'd imagine if you're a bit older or maybe you've tried something else and it hasn't suited you. But, I think the idea of stud farm management or sports turf management, agricultural mechanics, I mean, you know, the amount of young fellas in particular, and I'm sure girls as well, but young fellas seem to, you know, talk a lot more about machinery. But being getting up close to really good agricultural machinery is another area.
Yeah.
So look, there's those apprenticeships, they're going to be rolled out in the next 10 to 15 months.
Is it clear how many places are going to be on these
apprenticeships? Not yet. I mean they'd probably look at the demand or they look at the requirement from the industry for placement people. And that'll determine what they'll do. But it's just that those jobs, those kind of apprenticeships are not just available or not just applied to Ireland. You know, it's not like doing an Irish degree.
Yeah.
You know, you can take those skills absolutely anywhere around the world.
Indeed. Yeah, you could. Now, also a bit of a shortage of vets, or at least particular sorts of vets.
Yes. Northern Ireland is experiencing it. And I think we're probably not too far from it down here. But in the last few months, they've seen a big shortage of vets. And there's no particular reason why. I mean, they're qualifying the same amount of vets. You can get in from, you know, there's an awful lot of vets now. You know, we've only the one veterinary college in Ireland, out in Balls Bridge. Well, it's out in UCD now. And, there's just full employment out of it. But an awful lot of kids now who want to do veterinary science. And like, I don't know, is it 500 and
it's a lot of
shock
points,
and
yeah.
vines?
Oh, yeah.
you know, they're going off to Budapest, or they're going to Krakow, or they're going to, you know, Eastern Europe to do veterinary, to universities that have been providing veterinary courses for 100 years and more. Very, very high standards as well. And so they're coming back and they're getting registered and, you know, they're filling, you know, that extra need. But in the north in particular, anyway, it would seem to be that, you know, a lot of them are choosing not to work in the large animal practices because, you know, it's far easier, you know, to get a vet than a doctor these days. You know, a vet will come out to you at 3 a.m. on the call, on the first call you make. There's no such thing as having to go and, you know, now, okay, if it's a small animal, you bring it to the vet, all right. But if you've got a cow calving or something like that happening, the vet will come out at 3 a.m. without a shadow of a doubt. So, but the older vets did, but the younger ones aren't as inclined to want to be doing it. And so they're choosing not to work maybe in the large animal practice. They're going into R&D because, like, they're really, really bright youngsters. And they're into private industry as well, or they're gone working in the labs. And if they, you know, if they are working in the large animal practice, they're inclined to be doing it on a nearly part-time basis. So where once you had one vet, you've now 1.5 or 1¾ doing the same work.
Yeah.
Because people are working 3 and 4 days a week instead of like nearly 7 days a week. So look at
And you're, when you say a large animal practice, it's for large animals rather than the practice itself is particularly large. Do they tend to be one large person animal bands?
Yeah, well, an awful lot of them are one. Like the GPs, you know, your vet.
Yeah.
The vet, you know, you ring their vet. He's your vet, and you know, you better, you know, most people stay with their vet for their life, and that's it. But when I talk about large animal practice, it's not the dogs and cats and hedgehogs,
yes,
and
of course,
all of that sort of stuff. It's farm animals basically, or racehorses. I'd imagine in some of the studs there's racehorses, or where there's racehorses, you know, there's vets on call 24/7 there, or actually living on the premises.
I would imagine there's
But in the UK at the moment, there's a big issue because they reckon that 90% of the vets who are working in the UK meat factories are foreign non-nationals. And last year, over half the vets that were registered in the UK came from continental Europe. Now, in the case of Brexit, what's going to happen with all of those? They're basically, you know, migrants. So the Veterinary Association in the UK is looking for vets to be put on the extreme shortage list so that they'll get priority when, you know, being allowed to stay in the country and all. But if they're in the case of a hard Brexit, they're expecting something like, you know, food has to be certified as being correct and right and all the rest of it. And because they won't be in the UK, in the EU, if they didn't have a, if we don't have a good Brexit deal, they reckon there's going to be a 325% increase in certification required. And where are all the vets going to be that are going to have to do all of this certification?
Because they would have had to leave.
Because they may have had to leave. Or even with that, there's going to have to be a hell of a lot more of them in the country to be able to deal with all this extra work that Brexit is going to cause.
Marie, thanks a million for coming into us today. Marie Lavery there from the Farmers Journal. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas